So yet another day of revelations from the RHI inquiry. Michael Doran, the chief exec of Action Renewables, faced a tough day at the inquiry yesterday. Let's talk to the political editor of the newsletter, Sam McBride. Good morning to you, Sam.
Good morning, Finney.
So he's a leading renewables expert, and he accepted that he may have misled an investigation by the Charities Commission into his organisation's their role in the whole RHI affair.
That's right. Some of your listeners will probably remember Michael Doran if they think back to the Spotlight programme, which broke this whole scandal really to a wider audience in late 2016. Michael Doran featured in that as really an independent expert. He was one of the foremost experts. He described himself as one of the foremost experts in renewable energy in Northern Ireland. And really, he has set out in pretty simple terms for viewers just how fundamentally flawed this scheme was. He was drawing graphs. He was explaining why tiering was so important to controlling costs, why there was an incentive with having a tiered system to be more energy efficient. And really, the projection that he gave to viewers was of somebody who was a keen environmentalist, somebody who was alarmed at what had happened with the scheme, and certainly didn't give any hint that really this was something which he had seen at the time and hadn't warned people about. That was very different to the message which he gave yesterday to the inquiry, where he admitted a series of errors, where he accepted that he had known from before the scheme was even launched that it was possible to make massive returns from this scheme, that he was presenting to businesses who might be interested in getting boilers, telling them before the scheme had even launched that they could get their money back within about 2 years. And then, of course, the scheme would run on for another 17 or 18 years, giving them free heat and very significant profits. That was something which led to a series of very sceptical and quite probing questions from the panel yesterday. But really, Mr. Doran was at points apologetic, but at other points he was unapologetic. And when it was put to him that really he ought to have been more concerned about the squander of public money here, he said really that he didn't think that that's something that he should have been more concerned about at the time, that his primary objective here as the chief executive of a green energy charity was to get renewable installations into Northern Ireland. So some pretty remarkable evidence from Mr. Doran yesterday.
Yeah, he'd known the level of tariff and the cost of the fuel, and none of this he shared with an assembly committee which had drawn on his expertise. Here's the inquiry chair, Sir Patrick Coughlan.
The question remains, you knew what the price of fuel was. You knew what the price of oil was. And in 2012, when you went to ETE, you knew what was being proposed as a tariff. You'd read the CEPA reports, you tell us.
That's correct.
You knew that they were recommending no tiering because the price was quite the opposite of what actually was effective on the ground.
That's correct.
Now, why did you not raise that with ETE?
I don't know.
It makes no difference, I would have thought, how many times the thing was reviewed at the time when you were giving the advice to ETE. It may have been reviewed in the future, who knows? In fact, it wasn't, and that's something to do with Detti, not you, but why not give them this advice? Here you have experts who are telling you something that is patently untrue, and that is being used to justify removal or not incorporating your fail-safe cost prevention.
Yes, I fully accept that. In hindsight, we should have done that.
Why with the caveat in hindsight? Hey, you knew all that you needed to know to give that advice in 2012. You knew what the tariff level being proposed was, 5.9p. You've said it in your response to the ETI committee, that's 5.9p for that 20 to 99 kilowatt band. You knew they had tiering in the GB scheme. You knew there was no tiering in the proposed Northern Ireland scheme. You knew what the purpose of tiering was. Why did you not, at that point, knowing all of those things, recommend that they put tiering into the Northern Irish scheme?
Because I think had we gone back and recommended tiering at that stage, there would have been a delay of another year or two, and we were keen to see the scheme going ahead.
Well, does that mean you consciously thought about raising it with them and decided not to?
No, I have no recollection of that, and I've already said that I think we were in error in not doing it, but no, it wasn't a conscious decision to not tell them about tiering. It's difficult to be specific about something that happened 6 years ago. I can't remember what the exact reason was for not doing that, but I fully accept that we might not now be in the situation that we are if we had recommended that.
That's
a mistake you made at the time. And you're now saying, had we looked back on, and looking back on it now, it might have delayed it for a further period of time.
That's correct.
But being an expert body, having been created as a charity, I'm sure you cannot mean that it was worth wasting public money for a year.
No, it's not a matter of wasting public money. We wanted to see the scheme being successful and there being a high uptake. And had the scheme, as I was starting to say earlier on, gone through at 12%, and none of the schemes could have given a rate of return higher than 12%, then, in my opinion, being pragmatic, there would have been no uptake on the scheme.
That's all right. Go on.
I was comfortable at that time to see a scheme getting off the ground that Detti had the opportunity to amend within the first year.
So you would have been happy to see a scheme which incentivised people far too much in terms of a waste of public money because it could be amended within the first year?
I had to balance whether to, if we had challenged the tiering, I think it would have held the scheme back for at least a year or two.
What's wrong with making sure the public money is not wasted?
We weren't considering specifically whether wasting public money. Our main concern was to try and get the scheme up and running to the benefit of Northern Ireland. Well, one of the things that...
Should you have had more of a regard to the potential waste of public money?
Possibly, yes, if that's what the inquiry finds.
Well, no, I'm asking you, should you have had more of a regard for the possible waste of public money at the time?
At that time, in my opinion, no.
Right. And why?
Because one of our charitable objectives was to see the uptake of renewable energy.
And to promote energy efficiency.
That's correct.
Sam, it was a difficult watch.
It was excruciating at points. I mean, this was the 98th day of the inquiry. We have seen some witnesses in very tight situations. I don't think there has been a single witness at the inquiry who has struggled so much to explain their actions. And I think that there's something... really profoundly depressing in a lot of Michael Doran's evidence, because up until now, I suppose, many people have largely had a picture that RHI was being abused by people who were basically just greedy, people who saw the chance to make a quick buck.
Yeah, that was a perception by some. Not always accurate, though, of course.
Of course. But, I mean, that's, I suppose, the public perception. And really, the public perception as well is that if this perhaps had been handled a little bit differently, it could have been a great benefit to the environment. Actually, Mr. Doran's evidence is a man who is in charge of a major environmental charity, somebody who was trusted by Stormont to give them green energy advice with real expertise in that area, is that even among environmentalists, there were some people who were saying, in other parts of his evidence, this is clear, people who were saying to businesses, essentially, you can fill your boots, burn more than you need, and that's not wrong. I mean, on one occasion, he literally wrote in a report from his organisation to a business who was thinking about installing one of these boilers, that it's not wrong to run it beyond what you need to make money. Now, he accepted yesterday at the inquiry that was wrong. It was also probably illegal. But that was the sort of advice that was going out to businesses. And in that case, it's actually even more shocking because the advice that he was giving to that business was being paid for with public money by InvestNI. So you have this complete disregard for the squander of public money from a man who is being funded by public money. I mean, it really is something that you, I think, could not make up.
Let's go back to that previous investigation, because what Mr. Doran did or didn't know was the subject of an investigation by the Charity Commission, and it followed a newspaper article suggesting that Action Renewables, they had facilitated boiler applications for payment knowing the scheme and the scheme flaws. The Charity Commission closed the file, having been told that the organisation only found out about the problems back in 2016. We now know they've been aware for years before that. Here's the inquiry's barrister, Donal Lunny.
So either the Charity Commission have made some very bad mistakes in their investigation, or what they were being told at that point by your organisation, and you're one of the people who spoke to them,
yes,
is very different to what you're now telling the inquiry.
That's possible.
Well, which is it?
I can't remember the details that we provided them with or what they asked for.
Does that mean that you might have given an account to the Charity Commission that is significantly different from the account you've given the inquiry today?
Yes, that's possible.
How could that have arisen?
I don't know. I have to say, I hadn't seen this document before. It may well have been in the bundle. I apologise, I didn't see it. So I wasn't aware that this existed.
Who was responsible for dealing with the Charity Commissioner?
They saw the entire board.
Pardon?
They saw our entire board. They came in and met the board.
And you were on that board?
I was.
So the information that the Charity Commissioners have, insofar as it came from anyone, came from you?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, it seems to me, given what you said today, the inescapable inference is you were misleading the Charity Commissioners. Have you any response to that?
It would appear from this document, yes.
What were the documents that the Charity Commissioners were provided with?
I don't recall.
But you were the person and the other trustees who were being investigated.
Yes.
And the Charity Commissioners have referred to seeing documents and other records. What were they?
I don't know. I'm not being awkward. I genuinely don't know. I can't remember.
Did you give them the technical consultants' reports?
No, we didn't.
Why not?
Because at that stage we had forgotten that we had done them. So this wasn't a matter of trying to cover up from the Charities Commission.
So this was
the... It means in the end of the day, Mr. Doran, the panel is going to be left with a choice between two possibilities. One, you and your trustees actively misled the Charity Commissioners in the course of carrying out an inquiry. The other one is that you and your trustees are so awfully incompetent that you couldn't even remember documents that might have assisted in that investigation. Do you want to have any comment on that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
Again, it's hard to listen to, Sam.
It's just remarkable evidence, and I think, as with so many other aspects of this inquiry, it is shining a light way beyond the issue of RHI. So you've a question here about a charity which is essentially acting in many cases as a business. Its turnover has gone through the roof from about £500,000 at the point where RHI was launched in 2012 to now almost £24 million. Its director's pay has gone through the roof. And it is using, I suppose, its status as a charity to give it some sort of moral authority. I mean, it was respected within Stormont. It was seen as something which was not simply acting out of commercial motives and really, I suppose, had the edge, therefore, on other companies that might have been coming in with simply a commercial mindset. And yet what we see here is that in many of these instances, it seems to have been simply operating as a business. And there are questions here, I think, as well for the Charities Commission, because once this was raised with them last year by Stuart Dixon, the Alliance MLA, really they seem to have engaged in a pretty cursory look at what was going on. They accepted the word of Michael Doran and his colleagues. And now that is something which Mr. Dixon says he's going to ask to be reopened. But really, it seems remarkable that you have this situation where a charitable organisation is operating as a business, where it is profiting from a scheme which it knows to be flawed, which is a drain on public funds, which is taking money away from the health service, from education, from the various other Stormont responsibilities. And yet that is something which the authorities simply seem to accept is okay.
Just finally on yesterday, Sam, Michael Doran claimed he paid very little attention to the inquiry so far.
That's right. And this was something which drew, I think it's fair to say, very highly raised eyebrows from the members of the panel.
Yeah.
This is somebody who describes himself as the foremost expert in renewable energy in Northern Ireland. And I think many people in Northern Ireland who have very little interest in the green energy are following this very closely. So they struggle.
It's almost hard not to. The inquiry panellist, Dr. Keith McLean, he said he was literally really struggling to understand that and why he'd not been paying more attention to what was, well, I suppose an inquiry he was going to appear in himself.
That's right. And Mr. Doran said that he had, for instance, never followed any of the proceedings online. He said he didn't know who the witnesses were. He said that he also hadn't followed the court case in which at one point he was the plaintiff. So he was the individual in whose name a court action was taken to try to stop the release of names of boiler owners. Mr. Doran is actually not a boiler owner, but he took that action in his name. He said that he hadn't read the judgment in that action. All of this is very relevant because the inquiry put to Mr. Doran that some of his answers to the inquiry in writing last year, when they first approached him to ask about his role in this, his answers were highly misleading. Some of them were deeply inaccurate. He now accepts that, although he said he didn't mean to mislead the inquiry. And really, what they were saying to him was, how could you not have realised these answers were misleading as you saw all of the evidence which was tumbling out? And his evidence is that he wasn't following this. He was off out of the country. He was doing other things. And really, he's not the sort of person who sits down and follows these things closely.
You can follow the inquiry yourself. Go to rhiinquiry.org. There are more to appear and to have their say, and the coverage does continue. What will happen today, Sam?
Today we're going to hear from two political witnesses, Patsy McGloan, the SDLP MLA, who was the chairman of the Stormont Committee, which was scrutinising the Stormont Department, which was running the scheme. I think there'll be questions for him as to, first of all, whether they ought to have asked more difficult questions, been more rigorous, and also probably questions for him as to whether he feels that they were given the full picture as to what was actually going on with this scheme, and whether there was a candour from the department as to what it knew about the situation. Then, much more interestingly, perhaps, will be Timothy Johnston later today. That's the chief executive of the DUP, really a very powerful figure within the DUP who is returning. He gave evidence on Friday of last week.
Did we know that he was due to return, Sam?
No, that was announced at quite short notice. So we knew that he was due to return, but it really hadn't been scheduled because he had overrun beyond the point where he was meant to finish giving evidence. So he will be asked about the point where the scheme was running out of control. He'll be asked about what he knew about that as a special advisor in the First Minister's office. And I think also then he will be asked questions about the point where this became a massive public scandal and he was part of the DUP leadership team trying to handle that. So there were questions coming in from the likes of yourselves, from BBC Spotlight, from newspapers, and some of the behind-the-scenes work as to how those were answered, as to how that situation was managed. He was at the heart of that, so there might be some very interesting evidence there as to how the party operated behind the scenes.
OK, Sam McBride, we will leave it at that. rhiinquiry.org for more, and of course you can follow our colleagues in the newsroom, bbc.co.uk/ni news for more details on that as well.